I'm with Martin Venter, the man behind Val de Vie. Martin, you're pretty low profile for a guy who's created an extraordinary place like this. So we need to find out more about you. Have you always been in property?
Thanks, Alec. Welcome to Val de Vie State. It's wonderful having you here. Yes, no, I think I was always passionate about property. I used to be a corporate commercial lawyer. I focused on that initially, but I think I soon realized that I, especially after I had a few property law cases where I was involved in rezoning appeals and all of that, I realized that I'm actually in the wrong industry, at that stage I met Louis van der Walt and François van Niekerk, the two co-founders of Atterbury Property. I was still busy with my articles as a lawyer, young lawyer in Pretoria at that stage, and I got to know them, and I approached François, the chairman at that stage, and I said to him, I'm passionate about property, I like what they do, I can see the vision, I like the vision of Atterbury Property at that stage. We're a very small company in those days. That was around about 1996, 1997.
When you say very small, what kind of developments had you done or had they done at that stage?
At that stage, Atterbury actually did the Atterbury Value Mart. It was a joint venture between Atterbury and ParkDev, a company of Louis Norville and Nino Haasbroek. I met them sort of just after they finished with the development of the Atterbury Value Mart. And that was basically the biggest asset on the Atterbury balance sheet at that stage, over and above one or two other smaller buildings. But there was something that I just loved about those guys' vision.
Energy, what was it?
Yeah, I think it was a combination of the individuals, who they are, who they were and who they still are. I loved the, you could see you're dealing with people with integrity. Although they're dynamic businessmen and hard negotiators, but I just loved the way that they're doing business.
How big was a Value Mart, this development?
So Atterbury Value Mart in those days, that was one of the first developments of Atterbury Property. I'm under correction, but I think the first phase was around about 12,000 square meters of GLA, if I remember correctly. Obviously broken up into different phases.
But that's relatively small compared with their current portfolio.
Correct. The chairman at that stage, François van Niekerk, actually advised me to, he said that add much better value to them if I do some sort of a more relevant qualification. He had actually advised me to either become a CA then after my legal studies and after I qualified as a lawyer, or he said the other alternative is just to do a proper MBA. Obviously I took the shorter route at that stage, and I went to Stellenbosch Business School. I completed my MBA studies.
Were you from this part of the world?
No.
Where are you from?
I was originally born in Pretoria, and I grew up in Kempton Park. And then I did my legal studies at the University of Pretoria. I finished my BLC LLB over there.
So you came here to Stellenbosch University.
Correct.
To fall in love with a...
Yes, no, and when I started, I just left the Cape. I just left the Cape Winelands. After I finished with my studies, François and Louis flew down. Myself and Gerard Huister, another friend of mine, started the affiliation company of Atterbury Property in down the Cape. Interesting, I realized after a number of years, I think I was with them for about 2 years, I gained a tremendous amount of experience. I realized that my passion is actually more lies in the luxury residential type of developments. And Atterbury was always very much more focused on retail and commercial. So I had to chat with François and Louis, and I left the company. They allowed me to keep my shares in both AdFund and the TAC. And I started my own company. I went in on a sabbatical for about 12 months. Well, I stayed in Florida and the United States, in places like Soto Grande in Spain, and to basically study all the highly successful luxury lifestyle type of estates. I think to understand the trends, to understand the markets, etc., etc. What are people looking for? That was what I was trying to understand, get a grip on.
So you love property.
Yes.
You had the legal background. You've
yes.
now got an MBA.
Yeah.
You go and study. How old are you at this stage?
Before okay, I was when I left Atterbury as a director, I was 30 years old. So I joined Atterbury at the age of 28. Left them when I was 30. I did a sabbatical for a year until I was 31. And then I came back and I started looking for the right property, you know, to purchase the right farm and the right location to do this development that
Why
I
the
dreamt about. Well, it's actually quite a good question, Alec. Look, obviously, throughout South, I looked at the property hotspots in South Africa at that stage. Obviously, certain areas in the Joburg region, I identified, I think, a few spots in Pretoria East. And then I think one of the other spots that I looked to was closer to Zimbali. And then obviously the Cape as well. So I knew what I wanted to do. So I had the vision. I had the concept. I obviously on my own ran quite a number of feasibilities and, to try and carve out something that, because as we all know, the important thing is always to bring your dreams practically into reality. That doesn't help if you've got a dream and you try and live out that dream and there's no economic or financial feasibility involved. So I had the concept, and I, in the end, I tried to find the right properties to buy, and that was, I think, my biggest challenge in those days.
Most people would have said, "What about the money?" Because I have a look at this incredible thing that you've created here. Where did you have the money?
Well, luckily, I made a few bucks when I was with Atterbury in those first 2 years. Remember, that was also the time when interest rates, during that from 1997 to 2000, interest rates dropped from around about 22% down to 12%. So we were quite successful from a timing point of view. You know, if you initially started out and you develop a retail shopping center, I remember one of the first ones that we developed when I was with Atterbury, we developed at a 16% initial net yield. And interest rates came down during the time the 18 months when we developed that center. Interest rates came down to around about 13-14%, dropping 10%. So you had that whole momentum in South Africa where cap rates came down. So you literally do very favorable revaluations of assets on a yearly basis. And remember, we had very high escalations due to the high inflation rates in those days. So you started out, you had tenants that were still signing five-year leases at 12% escalations. So you can imagine what that did to a shopping center. If you developed at a 16% initial net yield, you've got 10 to 12% escalations, and cap rates dropped from 15%, it came down to, in a very short time, to around about at that stage, 11-12%. So you literally doubled your money almost every 6 months.
So you had the knowledge and the money and the dream and the idea.
So, obviously, it's everything's relative. But I had enough money to take a sabbatical for a year and to look for the right property. And remember, properties in those days were relatively cheap in South Africa. So I think I was lucky with the timing. When I found this farm, I purchased it, I think in those days, for 20 million rand, which was around about 220 hectares. And
it's still a sizable chunk. That's a sizable investment.
Yes, yes. No, it was serious money. I purchased the farm in 2002. So it took me about a year to find the right property. I tried all over around about in the surrounding areas of the winelands, outside Stellenbosch, outside Franschhoek, etc., etc. What I liked about this property, I actually started doing chartered flights over the winelands eventually when I got frustrated. It's because I couldn't find the right spot. But what I liked about this property was the fact that it's about 3 kilometers from the N1 highway, which makes it a 35-minute drive during average traffic hours to the Cape Town waterfront, 35 minutes roundabout to Cape Town International Airport. It's quite a good location, but also I think one of the most important aspects that I realized when I did my research overseas, looking at the most successful estates, you need to develop these type of estates in a primary residence area. Very important. So in other words, live and work position. You need to offer resort style activities so you can get that tourism market, which is, make no mistake, if it's the right location, it's a very strong market. But I realized that especially in South Africa, because the market is relatively small in comparison to Europe and America, I realized that I need to target your primary residence buyers as well. So in other words, if I was on the other side of the mountain with this estate, that extra 15, 20 minutes drive, you're dead. I would have been a dead duck. So
when you say primary residence, so people
live and work on the estate. And remember also with Valdevie, 60% of the people living here have got kids under the age of 12 years old. So you need good schools, you need hospitals, you need shopping centers close by. And luckily, that's one of the offerings of Paul. You know, we've got fantastic schools here. Paul Boys High, Paul Girls High, La Rochelle. There's Bridgehouse Private School. So we've got fantastic schools.
That's why it took
the
you so far, so long to actually find the place. Yes. So once you found it, what was on the land?
This was an old wine estate in those days. On the one side of the estate, they had a sand quarry, which was mined. That also gave me, because when I saw that, I realized that my rezoning was going to be much easier. So there's quite a number of factors, you know, for the right property, for an estate like this, that you need to take into account. You can't be too far out. You can't position yourself. And I think that's the mistake that, especially the guys from Dubai World, the mistake that they made with Pearl Valley in the early days. When I purchased this property, Pearl Valley was already established. You could play 18 holes on Pearl Valley in those days when I started out with construction on Val de Vie.
And that's next door to you here.
Correct. It's directly adjacent to us.
Did you have any idea back then that maybe one day you could acquire Pearl
Valley? No. It was set. I mean, it's always been such a fantastic golf course, and it was a great estate, always. I think the mistake that Dubai World made with Pearl Valley was that they completely missed the right positioning in the market. They positioned themselves as this very elitist estate, far away, you know, actually aimed at foreigners. And the Arabs wanted to, in those days, sell 30 and 40 million rand houses, villas, off plan, which can work in Dubai, but not in South Africa. And I think that's sort of where they missed the plot. So they positioned the Pearl Valley estate as very elitist, very exclusive, and they succeeded in that. But the problem is the market. The market in South Africa, if you don't sell to the locals, unfortunately, we just don't have enough of a... We never had a strong foreign market in South Africa. So
you've got Pearl Valley next door.
Yes.
You buy this piece of land.
Yes.
Not thinking you could ever buy Pearl Valley at some point.
No. In those days, I mean, they were established already. You know, they had the 18, the fantastic golf course and all of that. That's also one of the reasons why I didn't go for a golf estate. Why I'm more focused on the other, let's call it unique selling points that I identified in successful luxury estates in Europe and America.
And Polo. Now, Polo has got to be one of the most expensive pursuits of anybody.
Yes.
You're obsessed about polo, I believe, as well.
Yes, the interesting thing, Alec, look, I've always loved horses, and I always had this dream about, an estate for families with horses and vineyards and all of that.
Speaking my language now.
But what the interesting thing, I think, that I identified in those days when I did my sabbatical in Florida, in the United States, was that the houses, the luxury houses on the polo fields in Florida, sold at a huge premium to the prime properties on the typically traditional Jack Nicklaus signature and other signature golf courses, which was an interesting phenomenon that I realized at that stage. And what I loved about now talking as a hardcore developer from a feasibility point of view, if you look at your costs, especially of my phase one with Val d'Avis, your equestrian, the equestrian side of things, to build stables, polo field is actually one big lawn, and it's not nearly the size of a golf course. I mean, we've got two international standard polo fields going. Well, we're actually busy with construction of two other fields as well. But a point being, with the equestrian side of things, if you've got a show jumping and dressage arena like we've got over here, and you've got polo fields and you cater for the equestrian lovers, you need paddocks, which is essentially, as you can see, it's white paddock fencing with green lawns. So there's a double use for everything. You've got your horses that must go into paddocks during the day. A horse can't stand in the stable the whole day. And you've automatically got your landscaping for your residence. And the interesting thing is, it's more private than on the golf course. Of course, with golf, if you're on a fairway, you've got golfers driving into your back lawn from time to time.
Does it help with laying out as well? You
definitely.
With a golf course.
Yeah, good point. Yeah,
Jack Nicklaus,
well done for picking that up. The thing is, you can, I think the from a feasibility point of view, where some developers made mistakes in the old days, you know, when the golf course estate, residential estate phenomenon kicked off, the Jack Nicklauses of the world and all of those fantastic golf course designers would design a golf course, and then the developer would fit in sort of the residential side of things around the golf course, which is actually, if you think from a feasibility point of view and looking at civil services, electricity and all of that, roads, it's not always economical or feasible to do it that way around. What we did here at Val d'Avis, we designed an estate and obviously made provision for green areas in between the houses. We tried to give almost every house a green area, whether it's at the back or on the side or wherever the case may be.
But polo is expensive, and people who keep horses have a lot of disposable income. Looking back, was this a huge risk? Was this the biggest risk that you're going to get an estate? And I can understand the economics around it, but if you didn't get the right people to have the horses to play the polo, it might not have worked.
Yes. No, you're quite correct. I think the other interesting thing that I realized with my research initially into these type of estates was that I was pleasantly surprised to find that in established golf estates, even in those days in Florida and in Europe, only about 15% of the people buying onto golf estates, even in those days, were playing golf. So in other words, that showed me that your market is not actually golfers. It's a piece in the puzzle. It's a portion of your market, but it's not the market. And exactly the same with other types of estates. So you would find that people, that only about 10% of the people buying into Val d'Avis, one out of 10 of them might have a horse here in the stables, or might play polo, or might be into show jumping or dressage, or one of those.
The rest just like looking at it.
Yes. The big thing why people buy into estates is on account of security and the open green spaces. And obviously all the combination of all the lifestyle and sports facilities that one can offer.
You've mentioned lifestyle. Is that a big part of this? Is it community?
Yes. One of the fundamentals of the Waldevie brand is wellness. And not wellness in the sense of the old traditional concept of having a spa with, you know, where there's manicures and pedicures and a little bit of Swedish massages and all of that. Obviously, that you will always have as a component of wellness.
Yes.
No, we do. We do have that. But we're taking a much more of a holistic view on wellness. So in other words, what do I mean if I say that? You'll notice with the Waldevie brand, we've moved away the past, I think, 5 to 10 years almost already from being identified as an equestrian estate. For the simple reason, we believe that the wellness component, and we break wellness down into the physical side, into the nutritional side, and even on the and also the emotional side. On the emotional, psychological side, we focus on community living. And also when you speak to people living in Waldevie, most of them, if you ask them why did they buy in Waldevie, they will tell you that, but there was something alive here when they got here the first time. There was something that they identified that they liked about the estate. Everyone is greeting each other when you jog or when you cycle or when you're in the gym or in the restaurant, etc. I think we succeeded in establishing quite a strong community lifestyle at Waldevie. So that's on the community side. And obviously, the whole of the estate is focused on family living. Security, we've got extremely high level of security, but it's not that visible. Because obviously you don't want to create an institutional prison type of feeling. But security, unfortunately, as we know in South Africa, is very important. Interesting, Alec, security all over the world, even if you go travel to some of the safest countries on earth, like Monaco and Jupiter, West Palm Beach in the States, you will find gated, the Americans refer to it as gated communities. So they've also got security. I think the subtle difference is in South Africa, the security is more important from a crime point of view, whereby with them, the security and the gated communities is considered more for exclusivity reasons. So there's a subtle bit of a difference between security in America and Europe versus in South Africa.
But it's a similar trend.
Mm-hmm. So all over the earth, you will find that your most expensive houses and villas are found in gated communities.
So you said that it was different physical. I get that with the mountain bike courses. You can go and ride your horse here. What about the nutritional?
So on the nutritional side, we're very much focused in this, especially in these last phases of Waldevie. We're busy with cultivated grazing. We're going to put up pivots. We've got a lot of agricultural land on Waldevie, which must always stay agricultural. That was just part of our rezoning approvals that we got due to the high potential of some of the areas from an agricultural point of view. So we're using that, and that's part of we very much focused on this whole farm-to-table concept. We're busy growing our own fruit and veg. We're doing, as I mentioned earlier, cultivated grazing. You're going to see some of my stud cattle there that I'm going to bring down from Namibia soon. So even in our Polo Club restaurant on Wednesday evenings, we've got our Argentinian-inspired steak evenings where you are being served Wagyu and grass-fed steak and
all
of that.
The food, yeah.
So, well, no. I don't know if everyone's going to agree with me, but our opinion is that the whole organic trend is not completely sustainable. Just for the simple reason, it's extremely difficult to grow organic foods on a huge scale and to make it feasible. It's difficult. It's really difficult. So we are more focused on avoiding the, the harmful insecticides and pesticides and all of that. And yes, you must always try and be as organic as possible. But we're not convinced that just going organic is completely the answer for the world over the next few decades.
Martin, how big is the investment in this? Not just your investment, the whole investment now into Val de Vie.
I think the total, if we talk total asset value, you're looking at around about 15 billion rand at this stage.
Extraordinary development of a dream that you had. Was it always in your mind? Did you have that vision?
It was a little bit of a dream that I had since I was a, to be quite honest, that I had since I was a young boy. But obviously not in this up to this level of detail that you see.
Well, you didn't know you'd have a wine estate as well.
I was always sort of dreaming about the. I loved our, when I was a little boy, our holidays in the Cape, you know, going to wine farms and all of that. And for me personally, there was always this synergy between horses and the Cape winelands and living on a farm and, you know, eating, having a drink of wine, and the wine is being made from the vineyards partially that you overlook. So the concept was always there, but not nearly to this level of detail that where we are today.
Val de Vie itself was already successful, but then you had the next door neighbor, Dubai World, that hit problems.
Yes.
How did you know that it was worth taking that huge leap that you did in acquiring Pearl Valley, which they owned?
Look, as I mentioned earlier, I think the mistake that Dubai World made was they incorrectly positioned Pearl Valley as this very elitist, this exclusive estate far away in the Cape, tucked far away in the Cape winelands. So they didn't position themselves like we did at Val de Vie as a primary residence, live and work type of position. So we found, all of us obviously, suffered during the credit crunch. I think globally, I don't think there was any residential developer that didn't suffer. But around about in 2010, we started correcting. We could see the correction in the market. We could see that our property started selling again. And I think in 2011, 2012, we were selling 50 properties a month, whereby at that stage, Pearl Valley didn't sell anything. They literally didn't sell, I think, one or two properties every 6 months or 12 months. I knew where the problem lied. And it was completely, their product was wrongly positioned. And they also didn't have this focus on the community life that we had. But it's always been a fantastic golf course. It's absolutely, Rake and I visited Jack Nicklaus and Ernie Els earlier during the year. And I could see that Jack also, he's got a very soft spot for Pearl Valley. It's really a fantastic, in my view, from what I've seen in the rest of the world. It's a great golf course. With a golf course, it's a living thing, so you constantly need to renew it.
But it's still a calculated risk, even though you knew that.
Definitely. Remember, when they ran into trouble, it took them quite a few years. They literally were almost liquidated. But they did a deal eventually with Standard Bank, who was the main creditor at that stage. I think they owned Standard Bank around about 600 million rand. And they did a deal where they swapped their shares, and Standard Bank just took over the whole of their estate, which I think was a good move from Standard Bank's side, because if they physically liquidated, they would have destroyed the brand completely. And it was already a difficult one, because no one buys into an estate where, as you're aware of, Dubai World in South Africa didn't do that well. So at that stage, so they lost a lot of credibility in the market, and I think people bought into Val de Vie, kept on buying, and we were selling at a premium to them. Although the amount of infrastructure that was already established at Val de Vie was, well, in comparison to Pearl Valley, we didn't nearly make the same capital investment that was made in Pearl Valley. So I realized that if we could take over Pearl Valley and merge it into Val de Vie, it would just become one of the other, body corporates that we already had. Because in Val de Vie, we already had that stage. We had the Polo Club, we had the Lifestyle Center, we had the Polo Village, we had the Stable Owners Association. So we had quite a number of different smaller body corporates within the bigger Val de Vie. And obviously, since we didn't have golf, which I didn't focus on because Pearl Valley was already established when I started off with Val d'Avis, I knew it could work. And he did. We bought the estate. We tried to focus and just copy and paste as to what we did here. We did kids' play parks. We tried to create more of a community life in Pearl Valley as well, to make it part of the Val d'Avis family. And I think the market realized that. And all of a sudden, I think people realized that. But Pearl Valley is actually not that far away from the schools and the hospitals, and because it was now positioned underneath the Val d'Avis umbrella as a primary residence. And I think that was I think that was where I saw the gap, which worked for us.